On March 26, 2024, a disabled cargo ship struck one of the supports of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge, which carried Interstate 695 over the Patapsco River. The bridge collapsed spectacularly, taking the lives of six workers. The incident shut down both car and ship traffic running through the juncture, disabling the Port of Baltimore, which is the third largest port on the east coast of the United States in terms of tonnage, and the nation's largest in terms of special cargo requiring roll-on, roll-off facilities. We are recording on April 25th, and today, 1 month since the incident, the first cargo ship has passed through Baltimore's Deepwater Channel. We'd like to take the opportunity to discuss the economic role of the Port of Baltimore and the impact of the incident. Welcome to FO Podcasts. My name is Anton Schauble. I'm an assistant editor at Fair Observer. With me is Nick Henninger Ayoub, Director of Policy and Research at the Greater Baltimore Committee, an organization which fosters equitable economic growth in the Baltimore region. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Before we start talking about the port, Nick, I'd like to give our viewers a picture of Baltimore more generally. Baltimore is one of the oldest major cities in the United States, dating back to the early 1700s. The Baltimore metropolitan area ranks 20th in the U.S. in terms of population and 19th in terms of GDP. Baltimore is the fifth city in the Boston-Washington megalopolis and often seems to take a back seat, at least in the popular imagination, to its neighbors, Washington to the south and New York and Philadelphia to the north. I hail from northern New Jersey, and people who come from my part of the country tend to remark that Baltimore is what you drive through in order to get to the capital. I've always thought that this assessment was critically unwarranted. I'm sure you do as well. Can you tell us a bit more about Baltimore as a city and the role it plays in the U.S., both as a nation and as an economy?
Absolutely. So thank you for that introduction and just a little bit of the geography around Baltimore, which I think you assessed very accurately. One of the things that I think about a lot is that at one point in America's history, Baltimore was the third largest American city. And it really was the gateway from the Atlantic Ocean to the entire Midwest. And so we have here the birthplace of the railroad. We know now Johns Hopkins was one of those early investors in the railroad, and now we have his university and his hospital to benefit us. But from Baltimore, trains came in and out carrying all kinds of grain and other shipments coming from the Midwest and then putting them on ships here in Baltimore and taking them to the entire world. And so that's sort of how I look at Baltimore as that industrial powerhouse, which maybe in modern times, that's one, not an area that we might think of when we think of Baltimore, given some of the perceptual challenges that Baltimore has. But it really is that industrial gateway for America and middle America, especially to the rest of the world. And so we see that now even today with a lot of the coal exports in the United States coming from the Midwest and out through the Port of Baltimore to the rest of the world. So Baltimore, absolutely, more than just being that city 35 miles north of DC, has its own rich history, its own series of cultural landmarks, and its own kind of story, which we are trying to make sure at the Greater Baltimore Committee that we're telling that story, both in terms of the richness of the past, the richness of the present, and all of the hope that we have for the future here.
Could you perhaps tell us a little bit more about what the Greater Baltimore Committee does?
Absolutely. So the Greater Baltimore Committee is a partnership of more than 400 businesses and institutions in Greater Baltimore, which we look at as not just the city of Baltimore, but the city of Baltimore and the six surrounding counties within our MSA. And our goal is to really bring together the business and institutional community to take on difficult challenges, whether that be, obviously, our primary focus is in the economic development category, but we also take a very strong approach to issues around transportation, infrastructure, as we'll talk about today, and then even issues where we feel that we can contribute to the collective momentum. And so whether that's public safety, whether that is addressing the vacant housing challenge that Baltimore is known for, in addition to broader entrepreneurship and ease of doing business concerns. So we really try to lend the business and institutional voice to some of those conversations and make sure that as a region, we're moving forward together in one accord.
Wonderful. I wish you every success.
Thank you.
Let's turn now to the bridge incident itself. We'll take a series of concentric circles, starting with the local impact, then the regional, national, and global. Baltimore just lost one of its main corridors of car traffic and had its port stopped up for now a month. What kind of impact has this had on life in the city?
Absolutely. So it certainly has had a very immediate impact on life in Baltimore City and in Baltimore County, which does surround the city on most sides. And I would start with the most immediate impact, of course, which is all those families that were affected when six transportation workers were killed during this incident as a result of the bridge collapse. And so obviously our hearts are with them. And I know across parts of the southeastern part of Baltimore City, and then even the southeastern part of Baltimore County, you know, those communities are still in mourning for those lost transportation workers. And that's something that we want to keep in the front of our minds. And that kind of leads into, you know, some of the dynamics that are at play in the communities immediately surrounding the bridge. And so in southeastern Baltimore City and southeastern Baltimore County, we have a very large Latino population, and all six of those fallen transportation workers were immigrants from Central America. And it really is very much an area of opportunity for folks, for recent immigrants who are coming and looking to make their mark here in America. And for the most part, it's a positive story about opportunity and economic growth. But unfortunately, without the bridge there, a lot of those folks are experiencing job loss and other economic and personal challenges based on that. I would also add that on the south side of Baltimore, so in the Curtis Bay area and the Brooklyn area, these as well are sort of lower middle income communities, which are very reliant on the industrial jobs that the bridge and the port provided. And so those communities are also deeply affected by this incident. And so, you know, if we think about it in concentric circles, we start with those who are closest in and whose lives have been really upended by the loss of this bridge and the shutdown of the port because of it. And then if you look just a little bit further out, you know, as a resident of Baltimore City, I can tell you that the traffic impacts have been immense. It is not like anything I've seen before in terms of just the normal day-to-day traffic, morning rush hour, afternoon rush hour, and even a lot of times in between. There's just backups for miles coming in and out of the tunnels, and then even around the I-695 beltway, which of course the Key Bridge was a part of. And so that certainly has been an impediment to so many people's lives. The bridge carried over 30,000 cars a day, on weekdays closer to 40,000 cars. And those cars are now being rerouted through either the I-95 tunnel or the I-895 tunnel. And there's also the impact of trucks. And so even though the port is mostly shut down, we are seeing more truck traffic on I-95 and I-895. And we're also seeing hazmat, so hazardous materials trucks, needing to reroute all the way around the Baltimore Beltway, which is causing backups really throughout the entire local region here. So it certainly has been an impediment to folks just trying to get to work, and even folks who might not have expected traffic at that place at that time are now seeing different traffic patterns and now having to adjust to that. And so in a very real way, it is impacting us. And I will add that that is even prior to the port reopening. And so when ships start coming in and out, as you said, one came through today, you know, we're going to see a whole lot more trucks back on the roads. I was just over at the port a couple of days ago, and I can tell you that it was eerily quiet. There's such a little activity happening there just because the cargo that was unloaded right after the bridge collapsed is now well on its way to its destination if it isn't there already. And so we're in a bit of a lull when it comes to truck traffic, but when that picks up again, thanks to the cargo ships moving in and out, we're really going to see an increased number of trucks on our roadways, both those that are not hazardous materials and can go through the tunnels if they're not over height as well, and those that have to go all the way around the Baltimore Beltway.
Right. So it's counterintuitive in a way, but the restoration of the port means that things will get even worse for the roads because that bridge isn't coming back in a month.
That's right. So we will be delighted that the jobs are back, and we hope that all those jobs do come back and come back quickly. And we know that there's both local and state support for those workers that are temporarily out of work because the port is shut down. But as you said, the traffic impacts will be, I guess, a bit on the negative side because the bridge won't be there in terms of being able to distribute that load.
Now, I'll ask this. You may or may not be a Washington watcher yourself, but what would your take be on the prospect of federal funds coming in to restore the bridge?
That's a great question. And I know that that's something that our state leaders and our city leaders are very focused on. And even our congressional delegation, of course, is taking the lead there. Maryland is a state with the vast majority of our representatives in Congress are Democrats. But even our Republican representative, Andy Harris, has joined with his counterparts to make sure that, you know, we are all pushing forward together to get the funding for the bridge replacement. And so that's a really good sign between our seven representatives in Congress and our two senators. It's been a very strong and consistent push, as well as our governor. Wes Moore recently was in Washington meeting with various Republican chairs of different House committees. And he saw a lot of support from folks who don't even live on the East Coast, right? These are representatives from Oklahoma and Missouri, and each of them recognizing that when there is a catastrophe like this, it's not about politics. It's about making sure that we can rebuild the bridge and, you know, support our communities and get through it together. So I think overall we're very hopeful, and we're going to continue to be hopeful until we hear otherwise.
That's good to hear. Let's zoom out now and talk about the regional impacts. How have, say, the neighboring ports in Philadelphia, Newark, New York been affected, the greater Boston-Washington corridor?
Absolutely. So certainly a lot of the traffic coming that would have come into Baltimore's port over the last month is now being rerouted. Whether that's ports in Georgia, for instance, Savannah, in Virginia, and then even, as you said, Philadelphia, New York, and Boston. So those ports for sure are seeing increased cargo intake. And it's interesting because, you know, as a region, one of the things that we want to do is continue to grow our port. And so while we're so thankful that those regions have helped to unload that cargo, we want to make sure that we're able to retain those contracts on a long-term basis and not have, you know, ships kind of permanently or semi-permanently choose to go to some of those sister ports. And so it's something that, you know, as the GBC and as sort of a business community, we are concerned about. It's sort of in the short term, it's a great benefit, but in the long term, we want to make sure that that business does return to the Port of Baltimore.
Now, it's not just as simple as, oh, Port of Baltimore is closed, let's take the canal, cut across Delaware, and land in Philadelphia instead, because Baltimore has specialized facilities that might not necessarily exist in Philadelphia. How is that interplay working out?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, each port has its own capacities and its own specialties, right? And so Port of Baltimore, because of that really rich legacy of rail infrastructure, we mm-hmm. certainly have a lot of benefits here that some other ports don't have in terms of being able to move a lot of material pretty efficiently over rail. And so, you know, whether that's having that material be put on a truck, whether that is, you know, just overall increasing delivery times for all kinds of products that would have come through the Port of Baltimore and had and would have had those established channels of where they were planning to go with those products. So for sure, we are already seeing that. Thankfully, I'll give one counterexample, which is that our roll-on, roll-off business, which is largely cars coming from Asia as well as from Europe, that business has largely stayed within the Port of Baltimore because we have an area called Trade Point Atlantic, the former Bethlehem Steel plant over it's called Sparrow's Point. And so that area is able to accommodate that roll on, roll off, because it doesn't require having large cranes to take the shipping containers off of the ship. And so for the most part, the roll on, roll off traffic, if you would, is still going well and is still taking place at the Port of Baltimore. But anything that requires being lifted on and off of a ship is going to some of those other ports.
Fascinating. This is all coming at a time when the United States has passed through a few years of its own supply chain issues for other reasons, the global pandemic not being the least of them. If memory serves, the port of San Francisco on the other side of the country had its own share of troubles back then. How do you see this incident playing into the story of the broader national economy?
Yeah. So, you know, if we look at the pandemic and those years when e-commerce, for instance, became such a big part of all of our lives, the Port of Baltimore grew leaps and bounds in that process. And both in terms of the cargo traffic coming through the port and also some of the industrial facilities around the port. So when it comes to e-commerce, you know, tens of thousands of jobs were created just within our region to handle some of that new demand. And we see that in places like Trade Point Atlantic, like I said, which now has around 20,000 people working in different distribution facilities just at that one former Bethlehem Steel plant. And so I think that within the broader kind of post-pandemic economy, you know, Greater Baltimore was very well positioned prior to the bridge collapse because of some of those, you know, varied rail assets, because of our, you know, three different ways to get through the harbor, right? You know, the two tunnels and the bridge, lots of different options for folks. If you're a trucker and you need to get from place A to place B, you know, Baltimore was certainly not the highest traffic location that you would have to deal with. And not to mention, you know, being so close to being within the state of Maryland, which is, you know, the number one state in terms of median household income, but also being so close to DC and Northern Virginia and so many other growing areas as well. So certainly this is a very upsetting turn of events for Baltimore, because, you know, things were incredibly strong for our industrial economy coming out of the pandemic. And it's just something that we're going to have to, you know, try to respond to as quickly as possible.
Now we'll reach our widest concentric circle, which is Baltimore's role in the international economy. You already mentioned that Baltimore is a hub for trans-Pacific and transatlantic automotive trade. What else is going on in that zone?
Absolutely. So immediately after the bridge collapsed, there were certainly a lot of fears that it would impact car prices here in America. And I can't say that we've seen that in any particular way. Again, largely because of Trade Point Atlantic and the ability to roll off some of those vehicles at a location that's just outside of where the bridge collapsed. And so in a lot of ways, I think that we have dodged a bullet when it comes to the automobile economy. Now, the Port of Baltimore also, as you said, serves the world. And so we are the second biggest exporter of coal among U.S. ports. And so there certainly are some concerns about coal prices going up and that increasing energy prices in places like India, where that coal is often destined to go. And I can tell you just right offhand that the coal terminal is just piling up with coal. And we're not seeing, of course, the ships being able to come in and gather that and bring it to its eventual location. But we are still seeing the trains coming in from the Midwest with that coal.
Is there any other particular sectors which are at the top of your mind?
Well, in a few other ones that I could point out. So we recently had a Domino Sugar ship be able to come through, you know, where the bridge used to stand. And that was obviously a very exciting thing for us, because Domino Sugar is a big industrial tenant, if you would, on our waterfront, and has been for over 100 years, I believe. And so obviously, you know, the sugar industry is impacted by this, but thankfully there are enough similar sized manufacturing plants or kind of refining plants for sugar along the East Coast that it wasn't impacted too strongly. Another area that the Greater Baltimore region has been very kind of proud of is our growth when it comes to cruise ship traffic. And so we have a cruise terminal, which has also been shut down. It serves, you know, the big, you know, Royal Caribbean, Carnival, Norwegian, and all those cruises have had to be, I believe, relocated to take their berth out of Virginia.
So there you have it. Baltimore is down, but not out. Certain industries and places will be affected more than others, but the light at the end of the tunnel looks bright. Nick, do you have any closing thoughts for the future, perhaps how we can continue to move forward?
Absolutely. So in a lot of ways, I think that this bridge collapse was a bit of a wake-up call for the region to really appreciate the impact of the port. And the port in many ways has been that sort of sleeping giant. Those who work there know how much activity is taking place. And those who have, you know, access to the data, you know, can certainly see the kinds of volumes that the port was, you know, moving in addition to the jobs that it was creating. But for the rest of the folks in our region, I think this was a wake-up call to really say the port is a crucial part of our economy. It's a crucial part of the American economic landscape. It's a crucial part of the global economic landscape. And wherever possible, we need to lean in to supporting the port moving forward. And so as we, like we talked about earlier, really lobby to get those federal dollars to rebuild the bridge, one thing that we are really focused on and that the business and institutional community is thinking about on a daily basis is how do we build the entire port back stronger than it was before? And so, you know, strengthening our roads so that they can carry the highest, you know, the heaviest loads, making sure that we can have proper dredging of the Chesapeake Bay and the Patapsco River so that we can continue to see the largest ships coming in and out of our port. Really making sure that the workers are supported, both in terms of living wages and good benefits, but also in terms of transportation options. So strengthening our transportation network for folks to more quickly reach the port when it's time for them to head to work and more quickly get home at the end of their shift. And so it certainly is something that we're focused on as the Greater Baltimore Committee and as a community. We're focused on building back even stronger than we were before and making sure that the port can continue to grow in the future based on those new investments. And we will use the new bridge as the leverage point, if you would, for that kind of resurgence.
Wonderful. Thank you for speaking with us today, Nick. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much.